Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's edition of the Dividend Kings Roundtable Podcast. This week, we will be discussing technology, which has sort of been at the forefront of investors' minds recently, with the NASDAQ leading the recent negative volatility in the markets. This week, I have Dividend Kings co-founders Brad Thomas and Adam Galis with me, as well as Wide Moat Research contributor Stephen Hester, who is also known as Williams Equity Research on Seeking Alpha, if you are already familiar with his work. So today, as I mentioned, we'll be discussing technology. This is a popular investment for many people, yet it's also something that many dividend growth investors have been sort of wary of due to the sort of speculative connotation with this sector. However, in this episode, we will be discussing why we believe that the technology sector is actually a defensive sector in terms of the strong cash flows and reliable dividend growth that it generates. You guys know me. I'm Nicholas Ward, by the way. I should have introduced myself to begin with. But I've been overweight in technology for years now. This is due to my belief that the secular growth trends driving this sector are going to generate strong dividend growth over time. A few years ago, when I noticed everybody carrying around an iPhone, I sort of began to think of Apple as the 21st century version of Coca-Cola. This company is nearly omnipresent. Their brand is everywhere. They're well thought of. And in my opinion, their dividend will sort of turn into that of Dividend Aristocrat over time. So with that in mind, I'm going to pass over to Adam. He has, a lot of sort of high level thoughts on the sort of, consumer staples / utility mindset associated with the technology sector. So Adam, let's give a talk to our subscribers here and our followers about why you think technology is such a great sector to invest in.
Thanks so much, Nick. So technology, of course, as we know, has been one of the hottest sectors of the last decade. There's a popular saying that software is eating the world. And indeed, there are, as Nick alluded to, many secular trends. We've got, for example, with MasterCard and Visa, we've got the war on cash that this pandemic has accelerated. We've got, of course, the rise of cloud computing. So strong names like Microsoft, Amazon, and Alphabet. We've got, of course, AI, things like, it's like NVIDIA, driverless cars. We've got the Internet of Things. We've got 5G that's going to expected to revolutionize telecommunications, and 6G is expected to start rolling out in 2030 or so. That's going to be even better. And basically, this is just all leading up to this increasing use of basically generating massive amounts of data to be able to optimize and automate almost anything. It'll affect every part of the economy, everything from basically commercial real estate to infrastructure to just how you and I live our daily lives. These secular trends that are basically expected to last forever, that represent trillions and over the long term, tens of trillions of dollars in additional economic growth and wealth. And so you've got some of the strongest names out there. The highest quality blue chips that we like to focus on that are just taking a small to a moderate size cut of that cash flow. And speaking of cash flow, of course, as Nick said, many technologies names like Apple, for example, they're shifting to more recurring revenue with software. Microsoft, of course, at this point is really completely gone to a subscription model on everything. Cisco is starting to bundle its software as a service with its hardware. And really, Broadcom, of course, close to 50% of their revenue. I believe it's currently about 40% of their revenue is now monthly recurring, with some of the biggest and strongest IT companies on earth. We're talking Fortune 500 companies. And so cash flow is becoming increasingly stable, which is wonderful news for income investors looking for dependable dividends.
Adam, thanks a lot for that high-level discussion. I totally agree. And a lot of the companies you've mentioned were sort of the popular, well-known dividend growth names within the technology space. And with that in mind, I am pleased to pass the mic over to Stephen Hester. He kind of sent me his plan for today, and he mentioned several names that I wasn't familiar with that do appear to be very high quality. So I'm happy to learn something more from Stephen Hester.
Great, thanks, Nick. Appreciate it. I'll jump right into it. I'm going to start with Johnson Controls, probably the most well-known company of the four I'm going to touch on. Interestingly, Johnson has divested a lot of its business units over time and is effectively a pure play on smart building automation. So the trend for this tech was already pretty powerful. It's in the news a lot. It's a subject people talk about and invest in. But the coronavirus has definitely caused this to accelerate. If you think of touchless doors, touchless sinks, smart technology inside buildings, even advanced air filtering systems, those are in much higher demand than they already were. So that's been a big benefit for Johnson Controls. One element that I like that's a little more nitty gritty, but nonetheless important, is many years of 20%+ operating income growth. And as long as you can control the rest of the firm from a cost perspective, if you can get that operating income higher and higher, you're going to end up with really favorable shareholder returns over the long term. To give you an example, 31% adjusted EPS growth quarter over quarter when most firms are frankly struggling. Another benefit is the firm reduced its share count by 17% over that same time period. So we're talking about a pretty serious return of capital to shareholders. You get a nice little yield, 2.6%. I mean, a lot better than you get in money market. And the valuation of 18 times forward earnings is pretty attractive on an absolute basis and very attractive relative to anyone else considered tech. We're going to move to a firm a few have probably heard of, Teradyne. This firm has been around for a long time, since 1960, but I do think it's still a great growth play. They have a lot of exposure to China, Taiwan, Korea, as well as Europe and U.S. So for U.S. investors kind of looking for a relatively safer way to get exposure overseas, this is a good one. The key here is Teradyne's ability to ride on the back of the resurgence in manufacturing in the U.S. Whenever a firm builds a new facility, it often uses services like Teradyne. They have advanced testing automation systems. These are already in high demand, and any increase in manufacturing in the U.S. is going to benefit these guys. Their margins are unbelievable almost. You see 50%+ margins. And sales grew in Q1. The sales grew over 42% year over year. So this firm is clearly firing all cylinders. I do want to point out, since you got to look at risk and reward, there is some Chinese exposure here. If you're investing in China, there's going to be Chinese exposure. They do work with Huawei a decent amount, testing cell phones for those guys. They test cell phones for Apple and Taiwanese firms as well. That said, it is less than 10% of the firm's revenues. It's a risk, but not a gigantic one. Teradyne has also doubled in the past 12 months, I think up 95%, but forward multiple 20 times, very strong track record returning capital to shareholders. I still think there's significant upside on the table and certainly worth watching. My third pick here, now we're going into the territory where hopefully this will be new and enlightening for some people, is Aspen Technology. This is a very high performing, but nonetheless, reasonably valued tech company a lot of people aren't aware of. Its primary service is software, and it optimizes capital allocations. That, you know, is something that any large firm, think of a big oil and gas company, for example, is interested in, right? If you can optimize capital allocations, even a few basis points, you're going to pay a lot of money for that. But the real key is, in the past couple quarters, companies are desperate to try to optimize capital allocations. Where do we reduce spending? Where do we reduce operational expense? And that's where Aspen becomes its most valuable. A key risk here is the oil and gas exposure. It's not half the firm's revenues or anything, but, you know, it's a decent chunk, and that's something to keep in mind. And there is some leverage here, nothing high, but it does carry some debt, like most of the companies in this, unlike most of the companies I'm covering today. I will say, though, that when applied properly, leverage has a point. And here, the return on equity for Aspen is over 50%. So these guys are using the leverage, at least so far, pretty wisely. And despite all the growth, 25 times forward earnings multiple, and I'm looking at the screen right now, that's the current one. So it is a little bit higher than a lot of the stocks that we all cover on a regular basis. But relatively speaking, for a software company performing well, I'd say it's pretty cheap. Lastly, I'm going to talk about a totally different kind of outside-the-box idea, and that's New Tech Business Services. This firm is a smaller, $400 million market cap, what I would call a non-traditional business development company, otherwise known as BDC. And let me give you a couple stats that might make you a little more interested. So it has not only outperformed the S&P recently, but over the past 1, 3, and 5 years. And in fact, 25% annualized returns over the past 8 years. That's not to hype this stock up in any way. It's just to let you know that this is a serious company delivering pretty serious results, and you know, it's worth paying attention to and researching. It's primarily focused in technology services. So if you're a small business, whether you're owned by NewTek or an external firm, you need help with cloud storage, payment processing, all these things that seem simple until you're the business owner and you have to figure it out. That's where NewTek comes in. It also makes loans and equity investments in portfolio companies, hence the BDC classification. That's where it's a little bit unusual, but still falls in that bucket. And the sort of interesting aspect more recently is that NewTek has been a major benefactor of the stimulus plans, not in terms of receiving the money, but it's generated a ton of fees as acting as a middleman, as a loan provider, helping those small businesses it already works with get the most and figure out, frankly, the bureaucratic nightmare of trying to get stimulus money for their firms. And the underlying loan performance throughout 2020, which is definitely a legitimate concern, has actually been really strong. But because it's a small market cap, it is an unusual business model. And frankly, very few people, even within the BDC sector, there's a few of us, but not many that cover NewTek. This yields a fully covered 12.5% yield, which I think is pretty attractive. So that's for me, Nick, and thanks to everyone, you know, who's listening.
Thanks, Steve. And I guess real quick, I know you have to leave here shortly. I do have a question about NewTek that, you know, like you said, those stats are quite interesting that, you know, anytime I hear a double-digit yield, I do worry about sustainability. So you said it's fully covered. Can you just highlight some dividend safety metrics for NewTek quickly?
Yeah, so you can still kind of measure NewTek the same way you would measure any other BDC, even though the model is a little different, because they still get a lot of loan income, fee income, et cetera. So adding all those components up, it's generally actually had between 1.1 and 1.4 times coverage by cash flow. And that's, you know, our independent assessment. That's not going off Yahoo Finance or something. You know, we took the time to do it ourselves. And the reason why the firm's annualized returns have been so attractive is having that consistently strong coverage has allowed them to double, I think, I don't remember how many years it's been off the top of my head, but only, I think maybe 4 years, they've doubled the yield while maintaining really high coverage. So, that's, you know, if you can double your yield and keep the train going, that's how you get those really strong returns. But if there's anything else kind of more specific you'd like, you know, happy to talk about it.
No, that's pretty good. I mean, like you said, this is a company that it is a smaller market cap. It's definitely something I've learned about today. I'm interested in doing some more due diligence in, you know, in the future. I'm sure many of our listeners may be as well. So we may have to have you back in the future to talk about this in more detail. But I think that was a pretty good overview, you know, for this podcast purpose. And with that in mind, we're kind of talking about BDCs here for the first time, you know, with technology in mind. And that's a pretty good segue. We have our resident REIT expert, Brad Thomas, on the line here. So I do want to pass to Brad. Obviously, BDCs and REITs aren't the same thing, but many people do sort of view them in a similar light. So Brad, you know, what would you like to highlight from a technology standpoint in the real estate world?
Yeah, well, thank you. And I appreciate Adam and Steven as well. Great job and some great ideas. You know, I've mentioned this in the past. I'm in the process of writing a book, a new edition of the Intelligent REIT Investor book, which comes out here very shortly. And what's interesting, Nick, is I'm tying together every property sector. I mean, you know, you could say that every real estate property sector and subsector has some type of technology, you know, an innovation behind it. So let's give you an example of self-storage. You know, 10 years ago, when we looked at self-storage or actually, you know, rented self-storage, what did you do? You go to the Yellow Pages, if you can find one of those these days sitting around, good luck. But you remember in the good old days, we would pull up our Yellow Pages, and if you find AAA storage, that's probably the one you're going to go rent from. Well, guess what? Today, it's completely different. And thanks in large part to these really five or so self-storage REITs, they have all invested heavily in technology within the self-storage sector. I would argue that self-storage could even be a technology business because of how they do their business and conduct their business and how they lease up their facilities. And it's interesting to see now with COVID how a lot of these companies are adapting. You know, also in the apartment space, how they're leasing new properties and utilizing technology to conduct interviews or tours using your cell phone versus going in person to lease up new space. So you're seeing technology across all of the sectors. But what's interesting with this book is we decided to break up all of the property sectors in various chapters. And the chapters that we have actually a technology chapter in which we have the cell towers and data centers and industrial logistics. Now we're profiling these chapters because these are the three sectors that are at the heart of the digital ecosystem. They all provide critical infrastructure for the value chain in e-commerce. So that's why we think it's really important to when you invest in real estate technology, those three companies, or excuse me, sectors, should be the ones you really take a hard look at. Now again, all of the sectors have some type of technology today, and it's really interesting to see how they all embraced it. Even in the retail sector, which obviously has been beaten down by the big bad wolf known as Amazon, but most of these retail landlords, Simon, for example, has made significant investments to try to level that playing field to become more competitive in the omni-channel business world. But those three sectors today are really what I want to talk about since we have a technology sector. Now, fortunately or unfortunately, depending on whether you own these stocks or not, they've become expensive. I went back this morning and looked at my core portfolio, which is really mirrored the durable income portfolio, which is our core portfolio at IREIT. I was looking back at our top performers. We actually launched this portfolio in 2013, I think it was, looking at it now. And looking at the performance over time, some of our top picks in technology were companies like Digital Realty, CyrusOne, and they both have returned over 20% per year since we purchased shares in those two data center REITs, as well as QTS, which is another smaller data center REIT. However, prices have become pretty high, so we can't really touch that space today. Then we go to the cell tower, which Nick, you and I have been collaborating on two of the better known cell tower REITs, both Crown Castle as well as American Tower. And again, you have nosebleed seats there. In other words, prices are really expensive with American Tower and Crown Castle. We do own shares. We got in early. And again, we generated 22% returns annually in the durable income portfolio with Crown Castle. And then you go to the logistics space, which is really, you know, the buildings or the warehouses that have, Amazon and Best Buy and all these logistics players. And again, those shares have become fairly valued because of the growth that we're seeing within those sectors. In fact, I did an article last night and I was looking at the forward growth estimates within the industrial REIT sector. And three of those companies, I can't remember particularly which ones they were, but three of those companies are forecast to generate double-digit growth in 21 and 22. So you're definitely seeing that growth and that demand within that space. There's still some opportunities there, and I encourage you, to take a look at all of those companies and always be looking for them, because there's times like we've seen back in March and April where they go on sale. I did want to pick a name though today that is actionable. This is a more speculative play that I want to stress again, speculative play. It's a company called Landmark Infrastructure. We've been covering this company. This is our daily deal today on IREIT. Landmark is an MLP. They are in the process of converting to a REIT. We believe that's going to be a catalyst for the company. They did cut their dividend or right-size their dividend, however you want to call it, because they basically operate in technology, which is really at the micro cell level. So they basically build smart poles is what they call them to deploy 5G across these planned communities, really across the U.S. and Canada. So it's a very scalable business model, the product that they build. But they did cut the dividend. So right now the yield is somewhere in the 8% range, $230 million, again, smaller market cap, But we think there's potential for this company to generate some pretty impressive returns, given that the majority of their assets are easements. They also have easement rights, are in the infrastructure, the communications infrastructure space. So that's another way to invest. At $9 a share, you're essentially getting their billboard business, which is roughly a third of their business, for free. And that's what's really hurt them, is that billboard business as it relates to the COVID-19. Now, that's come back a little bit, and they don't operate these like Outdoor or Lamar. They're actually triple net leased. So anyway, we provide a lot of that research at IREIT, but I did want to mention a more speculative name. We feel like there's potential to generate roughly 50% returns over the next year or two. And so Landmark Infrastructure, they do have preferreds, but we like the common now because of the deep valuation.
Thanks, Brad. Landmark is another company that I was not familiar with. I do typically avoid companies that cut their dividends due to my personal sort of priorities with the reliably increasing dividend yield, but it's hard to ignore, 50% growth, and total return expectations in the near term. So that is another company I will be adding to my personal wish list. I also do have to thank you. Before Brad and I were working together with WideMoat, I did, take one of his recommendations to own Digital Realty long ago, back in 2013, like he said. And, now I'm up triple digits on that investment. It's one of my best all time. So I just want to give Brad a quick thank you for that. And now I'm going to pass back to Adam. Brad sort of mentioned Amazon as being the big bad wolf in the retail REIT sector. I think we all know that. Amazon, what's it called? Amazonification or something. There's one of those terms for the company, being the 800-pound gorilla in the room. And so, Adam, I think Amazon may have been one of the companies you were going to touch on. I know you also had some higher growth plays that you wanted to discuss, due to their strong and durable cash flows.
Oh, absolutely. So I have five recommendations to discuss today. The first two are pure growth stories, and the other three are for the income-focused investors. So Amazon is it's the king of the hyper-growth names on the Phoenix list, 30.3% long-term growth consensus. I mean, these guys truly, Bezos, I call him a mad genius. He's one of the greatest capital allocators of our age. I mean, the thing about Amazon is they're just, they define optionality. They started out, of course, selling books online. Then they started selling everything online. And then, in terms of creating their backend, gathering the customer data, analyzing it, that's how they created Amazon Web Services. And then customers said, hey, can we buy that? And so they started selling that. And then, they rolled out Prime to gather, keep people in the ecosystem, gather even more information, feed that into their compute, machine learning algorithms. And now they're using that to basically generate the best ad revenue conversions in terms of returns on income or returns on investment for companies of any advertising. And so they're the fastest growing advertiser online. They're number three in the world behind Alphabet and Facebook. And so these guys, I mean, they really, in terms of, physical retail, they're getting into that as well. I mean, they're just getting their hands into every corner of like the global economy. It's quite remarkable. And the thing about Amazon, of course, is a lot, it's up close to 100% this year. But if you look at just the growth is so high that 2021 consensus estimates in terms of average fair value is $4,389. So even today, Amazon looks like if you look at this coming year, they're about 27% undervalued, slightly undervalued for 2020's consensus estimates. So, Amazon, super swan quality company, AA- stable credit rating, just truly a wonderful company. And right now, I would consider a classic Buffett, wonderful company at a fair price for 2020, if not a highly attractive price for 2021. And then the second fastest hypergrowth name on the Phoenix list, Universal Display. Now, this is also somewhat speculative, simply because their main customers are Samsung and Apple. They basically own most of the patents on organic light emitting diodes, so the screens on our phones. Now, the thing is, of course, Samsung and Apple, they're working on micro LED technology, which would get around those patents and potentially disrupt their business. Now, of course, analysts, they're well aware aware of this threat. They still expect it to grow around 29% over time. In terms of fair value range on these guys is extremely wide. And that's another reason that it's potentially speculative. And one final thing to consider with these guys, and the reason that we recommend a 2.5% or smaller position size, we've bought them, I think, 4 times so far. It's close to 1% of Phoenix, is they have an average 59% annual volatility over the last 15 years. They're literally the most volatile stock on the entire master list. I mean, in any given year, they can literally go up or down 60%. And so this is why it's so important to buy them in bite-sized pieces, because you never know basically when these guys crash. But in terms of income stocks, one of the best that we recommend right now, we've bought it several times as a core holding through limits, is Cisco Systems. The biggest hardware maker for in terms of internet and IT spending. As I alluded to, they're becoming a lot more focused on recurring revenues. It's close to around 35 or 40% of total business revenue, and they're shooting for 50% over the next few years. They're currently yielding 3.7, and to give you some context, historically, they yield 2.8, about 16% undervalued, currently an A+, 100% potentially exceptional investment idea. Now, with Cisco, you're not going to necessarily, earn Amazon-like returns. Of course, you just basically close to around 10 to 11% long-term returns. But the idea behind a core holding like Cisco is, as I explained, of course, in the Daily Blue Chip Deal videos that covered Cisco and are buying it several times now, this is one of the most profitable companies on earth, returns on capital over 500%. So by Joel Greenblatt's definition, one of the highest quality companies on earth. You're looking at a AA- stable credit rating. So again, preservation of capital is a very safe investment. And so the idea with Cisco is that if today, analysts basically expect it to basically grow around 6 to 8% over time, if you can lock in a very safe 3.7% yield, you're looking around 11 to 12% long-term total returns with very little risk. So from a risk-adjusted perspective, Cisco is a very attractive name to consider. Another, of course, one of my and Chuck's favorites is Broadcom. Currently yielding about 3.5%. It's about fair value for 2020. I haven't updated it for 2021, but basically, potentially, we consider it a reasonable buy, basically. Potentially slightly over undervalued for next year. Now, the thing with Broadcom, of course, is now it is slightly riskier than some of these tech names like Cisco, for example, Amazon, AA rated companies. Broadcom is BBB- stable. And the reason for that is that their Hawk 10 is a mad genius. He's basically the Jeff Bezos or the Warren Buffett of his industry, of the chip makers. Just the way he structures deals is truly Shark Tank-like. He never overpays. He gets really stable cash flow. He sells off non-core assets, maximizes synergies. It's truly brilliant. But of course, with leverage, that's essentially why they're 4 out of 5 dividend safety right now. They really have to bring that leverage down. Now, they're executing really well on that, paying down that leverage over time. It's a BBB- but stable rating. And rating agencies are very confident that they'll bring leverage down to under 3 over time. However, they're likely to, once they get down to that 3-time leverage, they're probably going to buy someone else, most likely another infrastructure software as a service company, like they did with California Technologies. As well as Symantec's enterprise business. And so the great thing about Broadcom is about 40% of their cash flow is now monthly recurring revenue. So chip making is a relatively cyclical industry, but they have the most stable cash flow in the industry. Management expects to grow at 10%+ over time. Analyst consensus is for 12%. And so if you're buying Broadcom at fair value at 3.5% yield, you're looking at over the long term, eventually around 15.5% long-term return. So that is wonderful long-term returns with very safe income. Well, not very safe, above average safe income, but very attractive relative to the market, about twice what the S&P currently yields. And finally, I want to highlight one of Chuck's recent recommendations. I know it's one he personally owns. It's IBM. currently about 19% undervalued. I personally recommend waiting for 20% before considering it a good buy. It's 8 out of 11 above average quality. So not Phoenix caliber. It's not on the Phoenix list. We can't quite buy it until they basically deleverage and get upgraded to a blue chip safety. But the nice thing about them is they're a dividend aristocrat. They do have a very recurring revenue. Now, of course, Virginia Rometty has been she was a horror show of a CEO. 6 or 7 years. Actually around 8 years, she tried to turn around the business, migrating them in the turnaround towards cloud computing. Now they've brought in basically a new CEO that was head of their cloud computing division. And just like Microsoft basically replaced Steve Ballmer with Satya Nadella, head of cloud computing, that IBM is doing the same. Now, I'm not saying that, their new CEO is going to turn them into the next Microsoft. In fact, analysts, the long-term consensus is 5% long-term growth. So, you know, that's around 2.5 times slower than Microsoft's expected to grow over time. But the idea behind IBM is they're offering a above average safe dividend right now, 5.4%, highly attractive. That's basically what Chuck points out. Their valuation, of course, is a 19% discount in this overvalued market where it's growth at any price, and anything tech seems to be, IPOing and just doubling in the first day. So IBM, with 5.4% yield, you're buying it at a modest discount. If they do manage to grow at that 5%, then you're basically looking around 12 to 13% long-term return. So much better than it's delivered, of course, over in the future. Now, of course, they do have a lot of debt from the Red Hat acquisition that they're focusing on. So they've stopped buybacks. They're focusing on deleveraging. S&P and the credit rating agencies are confident. It's basically an A stable credit rating. And so they're confident that the deleveraging will work. And over the next few years, they'll basically get to a nice, safe levels of leverage. They'll get upgraded to a 5 out of 5. And if it remained at today's valuation, it'd be a Phoenix caliber company. So it's certainly one that I can recommend. So again, those recommendations are Amazon and Universal Display, AMZN and OLED tickers, respectively, for pure growth. Just remember, OLED is somewhat speculative and extremely crazy volatile. Cisco has a great core holding, A+, exceptional investment idea right now. Broadcom is basically a B+, good investment opportunity, roughly fair value, 3.5% yield. And IBM is a potentially reasonable buy, very close to a good buy, 19% discount, 5.4% above average safety yield, dividend aristocrat, and expected to grow about 5% over time. And so I'll pass it back to Nick to close us out.
Thanks, Adam. I think you and I, generally speaking, I think we're usually two birds of a feather, and in the technology space, we are as well. I'm invested in all of the companies you mentioned, except for OLED. That volatility does scare me. And you did mention that, sort of the big dogs in the mobile space are investing in, competing technology. And, I'm always one to kind of stick with the winners in that regard. I'm not going to bet against companies like Apple and Samsung. And so I am avoiding OLED. I will mention, like Adam said, Broadcom CEO Hock Tan has proven to be a mad genius. I do own Broadcom. I think it's a great dividend growth company, but I do sort of want to double down on what Adam said, mentioning the risk. I'm not calling Broadcom like a roll-up company, but they do sort of follow that business mindset, kind of recycling cash flows immediately into more M&A. That does lead to debt. To reduce that debt, they need to generate more and more cash flows with their new investments. Historically, they've been able to do that. It hasn't been a problem. They've been able to continue to manage the business like they do and increase the dividend. But if Hock Tan ever does make a large mistake, it will, kind of hurt the dividend and also the company at large. So that is something to be aware of. Like Adam said, the new CEO at IBM, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing this correctly. His name is Arvind Krishna, Arvind potentially. I do apologize to him if he ever listens to this podcast. But, like Adam said, a lot of people are wondering if that transition from Jenny Rometty to Mr. Krishna is similar to the Ballmer-Nadella transition at Microsoft, sort of the quintessential old tech, slow growth company transitioning into the 21st century with the sort of cloud-based SaaS service as a software as a service model. And I don't know if that's going to play out or not, but like Chuck, I have been buying IBM into its recent weakness. You know, it's hard to ignore that 5.5% dividend with a, you know, low double digit price to earnings ratio. You know, hopefully they do turn it around. And if IBM does, you know, generate any sort of growth moving forward and we see mean reversion back to the 14, 15 times earnings level, investors are situated to make nice returns here. I will touch on one thing. Stephen mentioned, he mentioned Johnson Controls, you know, retiring quite a bit of its shares with its strong cash flows. That's a trend that we have seen play out in the technology space. I know that we're mostly dividend investors here, but I do think it's worth mentioning that, you know, shareholder returns are something to be paid attention to. With that in mind, I also own companies like Alphabet and Facebook. These are cash cow companies. They generate massive cash flows and they have massive cash positions. I think Facebook has roughly $50 billion in cash on the balance sheet, and Alphabet has roughly $100 billion. You know, so these are companies like Microsoft and Apple with these huge cash hoards. Facebook and Alphabet don't pay dividends. They have begun to return cash to shareholders in the form of buybacks. And although this is obviously speculative to say, I wouldn't be surprised to see these companies begin to pay a dividend in the future as more as they mature and as they as you, the sort of antitrust issues that we've seen play out you know, in the big tech space sort of prohibits them from making large M&A deals. They're going to have to do something with that cash, and you know, returning it to shareholders in the form of a dividend makes sense to me. I think doing so could you know, kind of increase their investor base and widen it out, and maybe even you know, expand their multiples even further. So with that in mind, I think Stephen, Brad, Ab, and I have all sort of provided, you know, a litany of companies that we're all interested in investing in the technology space. I think these are all, you know, very interesting. Many of these are proven dividend growers. Many of them are more speculative, but they do have the potential to generate long-term wealth for shareholders due to the secular tailwinds that are kind of pushing them along. And with that in mind, I hope you guys enjoyed this week's podcast. You know, let us know if you have any questions about the companies that we've discussed. We can obviously double back and talk about those in more detail later. And, you know, we appreciate your listens and your views. And until next week, I hope you guys are all staying safe and happy and well. Thank you. Bye.